According to many holy orders, some priests came back from bramble sleep. When they arose, they spread through the countryside, claiming to have returned with the words of gods themselves. Though one had to be careful, as there were many who claimed to wake from sleep to deceive simple country folk. Here in the city, only a priest who took the kiss of the bramble in full view of 20 or more priests from 3 different temples could be certified a prophet. Here in the city on Priestly Row, everyone knew there were genuine prophets lying in the bramble sleep. The Temple of the Merciful and Sly Asim had 4 prophets lying in the dark, waiting to reawaken. None of them had awoken in my life, but my father remembered a prophet by the name of Bilavi, who had woken, taken all the offerings surrounding him, and left to spread what he was revealed. So I gently fell to my knees on the prayer mat and stared at the prophet Valka. It was not the priestly tradition to close a sleeping one's eyelids, so his glazed, milky eyes stared directly at me, seeing through to my soul. I lowered my gaze. "Prophet Valka, I seek a sign," I said, my voice breaking with nervousness. "I'm just a blacksmith's daughter. We are simple people, but hard-working. We have done little to offend. But now..." I swallowed. "Now my mother and father are imprisoned, and I stopped again. My hands shook like leaves about to fall from a tree. "What am I to do, prophet? What should I do?" I waited in the dim light, staring at the cloud-white skin of his body and into the clouded eyes while waiting for my sign. I counted breaths to a number as high as I could stand, and then moved off my knees to sit more comfortably. I never took my eyes off the prophet as I shifted, though. Maybe, somewhere in my thoughts, I believed the prophet would blink and speak directly to me, like I was a hero on a quest given secret instructions. But he did not. Time stretched on as I waited. And waited. "Some have said I should run," I told the prophet. The prophet did not respond. "But there is another idea deep within me, one that may end with us all dead if I follow it," I confessed. "It was in my dreams when I woke. A helm with a glassed visor to protect one from the bramble. Leather under all the joints. I think I can dig for my parents if I am protected, but..." The prophet Valka's right hand seemed to stir slightly. Yes, I had certainly seen his thumb twitch. "Prophet," I gasped. My heart leaped into my throat. I moved on my hands and knees and crept closer to the pale body. The skin under the prophet's thumb trembled again. My mouth gaped wide with awe. And then the thumb split apart. Blood and pus trickled down the base of his hand as maggots writhed and tumbled out to the ground. I leaped to my feet. Gods! This was no sign. His body had lain fallow too long. He might be alive, but the creeping and crawling things of the world did not see it that way. They saw only restful flesh. I stumbled back and knocked on the door 3 times. "So fast?" the priest asked, worry in his features as the acolytes opened the thick door. I grabbed at them. "The prophet has maggots!" One of the acolytes muttered under his breath and swept into the tiny room, but the priest held up a hand. "It is a sign!" he proclaimed loudly, startling all of us. The acolytes looked at him, then me, and bowed their heads in agreement. "It is a sign," they repeated. The older priest took my arm and began to escort me back through the temple. "You have your message," he said to me as we walked back past the sleeping cells. "It is a beautiful thing."
"I don't understand," I said.
"To you or me, maggots are a thing of disgust," the priest said. "A sign of putrefaction, mess, garbage, ruin. But from the perspective of the maggot, it is all life. They live, they breathe, they grow. And you and I are like maggots to the gods, child. Do not forget that. There is the meaning of your sign. Do you understand now?
We walked on as I tried to grasp the meaning of his words and what they meant for me. An instant passed before we stood at the lobby. The murmur of hundreds at prayer once again filled our ears, comforting me. Life, I repeated.
You were shown life, the priest agreed, guiding me toward the steps and the bright light of morning on the priestly row, filled with incense and chants. The prophet gave you the sign. An uncountable gift. Life.
But what does that mean about what I'm supposed to do? I asked. Was it seek my own life? Or save my father and mother's? Or try?
Think on life, the priest said firmly. And there your answers will be. For we all die, child. It is only the choices of life that make matters.
The priest turned and left me quickly. Only the choices matter, I thought. Not the outcomes, the choice. What was the right choice? The doors to Milaka's opened as the final dregs of morning light finished dripping in from over the tips of Kaim's buildings. They always unlocked at this moment. Milaka was as precise as her springs and clocks. She gasped when she saw me, her sun-worn face immediately lined with concern.
Sophia!
It looks worse than it is, I told her as I stepped inside. There was a clock, just as precise as any of the ones Milaka made, running inside my head, keeping track of how little time I had left. I'd made a choice as I walked through the clouds of incense. I had a plan. It was dangerous. There was little time. But even before I had visited the monks of Asim, it had formed as I drifted to sleep, cooled and hardened in the night, and been a heavy lump in my mind when I woke. Now I had made the choice to follow it. To seek life.
Who did this to you? She demanded, seeing my bruised face.
A duke. There is nothing you can do against him. I took her bony shoulders carefully in my hands. I hated the lie that would come, but I had to do this for my parents. Milaka, I hate to ask you this, but you are almost my blood. Joka is your nephew. If you share my anger, I need one of your secrets. The Duke has trapped my mother and father in a pit, and will not release them unless I finish a suit of armor for his son. I'm so sorry I have to ask for such a thing. For what other wealth did tradespeople truly have but their tricks and shortcuts?
I'm an old woman, Sophia, Milaka said, not unkindly. I've given most of my trade secrets to many of my nieces. Your mother was always generous to me as well. Tell me what you need.
I sat with her among the brass cylinders and carefully blown glass globes on her shelves. You told me once about a clockwork hand that you built for an officer who lost his arm to a sword. Milaka stood up.
It was powered by magic. I cannot do such things anymore, not without losing my head. You know this.
I held up my hands to placate her. No, I'm not asking for that. I'm asking for the gears, the springs. How did you make it work? Show me that. I need to make spring-work gloves, something neither Malabaz nor Savar had ordered for this armor, but something I needed if I was to dig through unyielding, dangerous bramble with my own hands. She calmed.
I can do that. Over the next weeks.
I only have this morning, Milaka. Time is not on my family's side, I reminded her, with a small emphasis on the word family. Milaka closed her eyes for a long moment. Then she stood up and closed the door to her store. It was the first time I had ever seen it so.
I will show you what you need. Come back here into my workshop. We will get you everything. You will pay me later, or if you can.
Now it was my turn to close my eyes, fighting back tears. They have some food. and a little watered wine in a pack they had with them. But I don't know how long that will last them, or if their air will grow stale before then.
Milaka took my shoulders. Let us hurry.
Even with Milaka's decades of skill with coils of metal and gears, and my fine metal work, it still took a full day and night. When she succumbed to sleep, I drank tea and continued on, and she would correct my mistakes when she woke with a stifled groan from her cot. I slipped out in the early night and evening to keep the fire in the forge glowing, enough to pour smoke out of the chimney, and allow Savar and the rat he'd assigned to spy on me to keep thinking I was inside. I would never be able to repay Milaka. We both knew it, but I pretended I would, and she pretended to believe me. I bit my lip, and did not complain about our pace. I remained gracious for the help, knowing that had I only gotten a lesson and some tools, I wouldn't have been able to even make these clever gloves in the days I needed to save my parents. Thank you, I kept saying. But Milaka told me to shut up. Would you have turned away someone needing your help to save their own blood? She asked me. No, but some would. You and I are not some people, are we? We are family, bound by Joker's blood. Not high family like those across the river, but still family. We might be the mud by the banks, but leave us to dry, take the fine things in life, and then temper us in fire, and we are strong bricks. She bent back over the gloves and the crimping tools. The refashioned gauntlets lay on the bench before her, palms and fingers spread out like metal spiders. When she triggered the thumb mechanism, the left one closed into a fist, snapping the firewood I held out to it and crushing it into sawdust. Sometimes we are stronger. She showed me the mechanism, the latch near the elbow, and how to lever it back and forth as if I were winding a crossbow. The cogs and wheels whirred, the tension spreading as the gloves slowly opened. After I cranked the fists to full strength, I would have 10 times the strength of any man in my hands. The velvet one, who lurks outside your forge. People are talking. He could be dangerous to you. He only watches to make sure I don't try to run away. He is not very good at it, or much of anything else for that matter. You know that no one would blame you if you did run, Milaka said. What are the chances your parents will live, even if you finish the suit and hand it over? I slid my hand up into the gauntlet. It fit. I crooked my thumb and the mechanisms inside snapped my fingers into a fist, scraping them and making me hiss out in pain. I imagine the Duke plans to kill my parents anyway, I grunted, levering them open again. And probably me for causing him trouble. The armor is all he truly wants. Milaka grasped the mechanical fist. I could help you run, she whispered urgently. I can help you flee. You've risked enough just helping me, I said. If I were to run, and anyone knew I came to see you, you'd... Loti the Weaver is the only one. She won't speak to anyone. I won't run, I said to Milaka. I have a plan. She looked down at my right hand. I noticed that your hand fits inside the gauntlet perfectly. Is that part of your plan? I finished cranking open my fist and reset the clockwork inside. Savar's hands are small, I said. Delicate from lack of work, spindly. Milaka wasn't fooled. She stared at me until I blinked and looked back down at the glove. You will waste your life as well if you attack a duke. I had a sudden urge to tell her everything, as she had come close to sniffing out my designs. But the words didn't come. I feared that to speak my plans aloud would destroy my chances. I didn't want anyone, person, demon, or gods, to know about the intentions I held in my heart. It was my own secret to bear. I put the gloves in a case, nestled against fur, and hugged her. Thank you for your help, Milaka. You have done me too much kindness. She gave me an appraising look. I wonder if Borzai will weigh it so when I go before him.
I threw my arms around her.
He must be safe, my child.
Her voice cracked.
Be safe, Sophia.
Savar somehow found me all too quickly on the way back from Milaka's, as I shopped for leathers early in the morning, when sellers still blinked the sleep from their eyes. He shoved at the thick, stiff material.
What is this? He demanded.
Padding, I told him as we walked through the spice lanes, and my mouth watered. I had not eaten. I couldn't.
Why are you following me? You spent a day outside the forge. You tried to escape my eyes and trick me by keeping your fires on. But I see everything, girl.
Savar moved in front of me.
You are wasting time. My family does not have time to waste. I am not here to disappoint my father. Time is of the essence. I need that armor.
I've been getting padding, I said through gritted teeth.
Doesn't look like padding to me.
Savar jabbed at the extra leathers I had just purchased.
Shall I get some cotton pillows for under your armor? I asked loudly.
People stopped and looked at us.
Is armor too hard for your delicate shoulders? Maybe some goose down for your delicate skin.
Shut up! Savar hissed.
Shut up!
But it isn't protection you need, whatever you're going to do with this armor. You need special help to compensate for your weak fighting skills. What was it going to be? A scroll that would give you the strength to hold a sword in both your hands? Savar's face reddened. I'd pushed too far.
My father has taught me. I could breathe words that would strip the skin from you and make your eyes boil, he said.
I looked around at the crowds. Would he dare to do anything like that here? In the middle of a crowd that would delightfully call for the sensori.
The leathers, I explained,
holding them up and trying to redirect our words.
Sit under the plate. It's like inner armor.
And I needed to add enough to cover every gap to protect against Bramble, if I was going to use this armor myself, as Milaka had suspected.
If you are such an expert on what goes into armor, maybe you should build your own.
Maybe I would. Savar snapped, still angered. But my parents aren't the ones waiting in a pit, are they? He saw me suck my breath in, and he smiled.
Do you remember the townsmen of Horia? How they cut their own children's throats to drink, rather than die from lack of water? And when traders burned back the bramble on the road to get to the town, they found nothing but starved cannibals. Will your father drink your mother's blood? Or will she his, I wonder?
I swallowed the hurt. Swallowed it deep down into myself. Because I was born on this side of the river. Because it would only lead to worse. I ignored Savar and kept walking so that he couldn't see the tears stinging my eyes.
I'm watching you even more closely now, he said from beside me. Do not dare to cross a duke. Your time is running out, blacksmith's daughter.
After the full day and a night at Milaka's, I'd frantically thrown myself into work sealing up the armor's underlayer. My second day was now mostly gone. The glass on the visor, that had been tricky. But by afternoon I'd blown glass from melted sand in the forge. It was not my trade. So it took several tries to get it to cool in the shapes I needed. They were not as clear as I'd hoped for, but after I'd glued the pieces to Takaz's demon eyes, I could place the helmet on my shoulders and move throughout the forge. I'd never worked so fast. The gloves, the leather underlayment as strong as the aprons worn by the men and women who burned the bramble back, the last few plates I had sewn in. My father and mother would have been proud, I thought, as I rubbed my raw hands and massaged my sore back. But there was another dilemma, I realized, as I sat in front of the armor on its straw in the corner of the forge, after I placed the fearsome helmet back on. I needed far more plates of steel to finish strengthening the armor. The leathers were a last line of defense. I needed more actual armor. I placed the 3 gold coins thrown at me by the Duke on my anvil, and regarded their dull glitter. 3 gold pieces. I could finish the suit. I could get enough metal barely to finish the plates tomorrow morning. The coins gave me that. But it wasn't enough for my plan. I needed a cart. I needed supplies. I needed to pack, and in such a way that it wasn't obvious to Savard or whoever got a look inside the forge. 1 coin would stay with us. I wanted something kept from this hell. Some small token of profit. 1 coin, as promised, would be left for the guard Captain Lucart, to delay hunting us down. Which left a single coin to complete the suit. It was not enough. I stared at the suit, the fine engraving, the gold hammered into tiny channels, fashioned into flourishes and swoops that evoked the war demons of Kutchk. My parents were not here to tell me I couldn't strip the frippery and decoration off the suit. Everything they'd feared about that action had come to pass. I was the one making the decisions now, for better or worse. Okay, I said to the dark corners of the forge. It was the choices that mattered. I picked up a pair of fine pliers and walked to the back of the suit. I'll start from where the finery sat in the shadows, I thought. I began yanking and digging out the gold to pay for the metal to finish the entire suit. Melaka always needed fine gold for her clocks. I could trade for her steel scrap, and hopefully a little something extra. Maybe I could dance back across from the edge of this precipice. Milaka's was oddly closed an hour early. That the workshop had been shut before sunset puzzled me. I put my ear to the door and heard Milaka's shuffling feet on the other side. No locks clicked. No bolts shifted aside to welcome me. "You lied to me," the old woman said from the other side of the stout doors when I knocked at them.
"No,"
my voice broke slightly.
"You should have told me about Joker."
"And then what would you have done?" I asked.
"I don't know," Milaka replied. "You never gave me the chance."
I punched at the doors, rattling them, then pulled them back and hugged myself. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. I'm desperate. My mother and father are dying in a pit, Milaka. I have to save them. I need help. I need help." I pushed my forehead to the door, my eyes stinging hot with tears. But the doors remained barred.
"You said my mother was kind to you. Does kindness count for nothing in these days? What is it you need?" Milaka asked.
"I have gold. Fine gold you can use for filigree and decoration. I need steel for it. And supplies." A finger tapped the other side of the door.
"Sophia, you know I have seen much. Joker may not be yours any longer, and you will not become my blood. But you are a good child. So hear me. You need to run. Take the gold you want to give me and run. Now. Get onto the road. Use it for a dowry and find a nice man who will treat you well. Leave your family to their fate, or you will share it. That is all I can do for you."
"No, I have made a choice. I will follow it." I heard her start to shuffle away from the door.
"Wait! If you can't help me, at least tell me the name of a jeweler who will take the gold."
Milaka stopped. Her distant voice barely made it through the door.
"You'll want Zlatan. But he will likely betray you for extra coin as soon as he is able. And no, no one else will touch your coin. They've all seen the Velvet Child's servants shadowing you. You are tainted."
"All I need is a day," I said. Zlatan, the jeweler, stood for a moment, blinking in the lantern light at me, before looking down at the dirty cloth I had the lump of melted gold in.
"Inside,"
he hissed, yanking me into his small apartment, his precise fingers digging hard into my collarbone. I broke free of him, shoving him back hard enough he clutched his chest and wheezed.
"Do not put your hands on me," I growled. Hush! He shoved the wooden door closed. Do not wake my family, he whispered, or the neighbors.
Do you not trust your own family? Zlatan shook his head as he guided me downstairs by candlelight into the back of his shop.
You are here, in the dark of midnight, with melted gold. Children tell tales. Wives have friends they share their secrets with, and thus the circle leaps ever outward like ripples in water. A secret is only safe with one person. It is barely a secret between two. It is never a secret between three.
He walked over and pulled a set of small jeweler's scales out, taking the lump of gold from me. He inspected it, bit it, then weighed it, then offered me a third of the lump's worth in tradable coin. That's an insult, I said. I'd weighed it myself. I'd purchased some of it myself. What I handed you is worth three times that coinage.
This is its true worth, Zlatan whispered. Unless you could hand slivers of gold over to merchants yourself, why don't you go and do that?
My face fell. Zlatan nodded.
Exactly. You are here in the dark of night, and you don't want anyone to know you are trading tiny slivers of gold. So you take less to get my coins, which you can then use tomorrow morning.
I glowered. It would barely cover the metals I needed, and there would be none left over as I'd hoped. I'll do it. But you must give me a day, I told him.
Zlatan frowned. What do you mean?
Before you sell the information that I was here. You have your two-thirds. Wait until dusk tomorrow. That is all I ask.
Zlatan ground his teeth. I did not get where I am by selling information, no matter what you may have heard from others.
Please. It isn't my life, but my mother and father.
I know what has happened, Zlatan said kindly. The streets tell their tales, and I will give you the time you have asked for, if not much longer. We are lesser kind, are we not? If we do not help one another, then can we call ourselves neighbors?
Thank you, I said warily.
Now it is time for you to leave.
I walked toward the door and Zlatan grabbed my arm.
The back door, he said firmly. Leave through the back door, child.
Before he closed the door he'd shoved me through, I looked back at his brown face flickeringly lit by the candle he held. How long before he would truly give me up? How long would it take for word to trickle back to Savar? I had made a choice, but I could feel the coils of the clock winding down for me. Zlatan shut the door and latched it behind me, and I was on my own in the city's deep night. Savar shouldered his way past me to look at the suit the moment I opened the doors at dawn. I fought panic as I stepped in front of him.
This is your last full day, he said. It needs to be done by tonight. My father will be here in the next morning.
Then I have work to do. I pushed him back out.
It is my right, he said. It is mine to look at.
If you want it done by tomorrow, then do not cross the threshold, I hissed. Do not interrupt my work, or it will take longer. Come in, and I will stop work.
Savar stepped back, but prowled around the threshold anxiously. I thought about it. He knew he couldn't use magic, but he knew he would be following his father into a fight of some kind tomorrow night. He wanted his armor. I will leave the door open, though, so you can stare as much as you'd like. He could watch me sweat as I hammered shapes out on the anvil.
Your parents do not have forever, he said coldly as he backed away. Do not delay me what is mine.
Servants waited outside with a palanquin for him. Savar avoided the rising morning sun for the next hour by sitting inside its shade on comfortable tasseled cushions, sipping teas, and making my stomach growl as he had sweetmeats delivered fresh from the markets by men he would whisper to, then dismiss with a flick of his wrist. I could not remember when I'd last eaten. Savar would stare at me as I paused for a drink, or pushed the sleeves of my tunic up.
I knew that once the sweat began to drip down my arms, chest, and sides, the tunic stuck to me in a way passing men found hard to ignore.
Let him stare, I thought as I shaped the metal.
As long as he didn't get inside to look behind the armor, or see the supplies I had packed away under the tool trays throughout the forge. A woman in dirty robes slid next to the palanquin halfway through the morning. She whispered to Savar. She carried nothing with her, but her words changed his whole body. He stiffened. Savar slipped off his feathered cushions, brows furrowed, and stalked toward the forge.
5.
As Savar walked toward the forge, he pointed at the nearby guard posted by the palanquin.
Leave,
he said, his voice filled with the assumption that his command would be followed.
Now.
The guard looked at me, standing by the glow of the forge's fires, at Savar, and then melted away. I ran to shut the door and bar it, but Savar got there first and slammed his back against it. He lowered the bar down with his left hand, facing me.
Get out of our forge, I said, but I thought, gods, I've made the wrong choices.
I hadn't understood the signs given to me by the prophet lying in the room deep inside the temple. I was supposed to save my life, to run.
Savar, leave!
Savar ignored me and walked toward the armor. For a second I was torn. Try to stop him from seeing the armor? No, if I did that, he would know something was wrong for sure. He had left me at the door. I could run. Lift the bar up, yank the door open, and run. With nothing but the sweaty, dirty clothes on my back. I would die, begging for scraps somewhere along the road out of the city. Or I could try to hide in the city, always looking over my shoulder for one of Savar's agents hunting me. Or I could stand here, arms crossed, hoping he didn't circle around to the back of the armor, hoping that whatever he'd been told he wasn't going to peer into the shadows. Savar, I tried to draw his attention back to me, but Savar ignored me and leaned around the armor. I sucked my breath in.
You low-born piece of shit, he said.
His voice was almost reassuringly soft.
The man I set to follow you around was right, despite his babbling about truths. You haven't finished the suit. You are stripping gold away from it to sell.
Zlatan,
I muttered angrily.
I don't know who that is. Is that the name of the old woman?
Milaka?
I slumped, the betrayal sucking the energy out of me. I was already so tired from not sleeping.
That one crumbled when we offered our golden favor.
Savar looked thoughtful.
But seeing as that she was stupid enough to help you, I think instead we will send the city guards over to her shop and arrest her as an accomplice when I am done here.
I opened my mouth to protest, but Savar was a duke's son.
That old woman. Those brittle bones will break so easily when they make her pay the price for an offense against my father, Savar continued.
Milaka had betrayed me, but those words still struck me. You can't. She was just trying to help.
Help cheat me.
Savar pulled out a slip of parchment tucked into the sleeve of his tunic. I had seen that spelled artifact before. He wouldn't dare, or would he? He had sent the guards away. The forge was locked. I moved my back against the door and felt for the bar.
Cheat me of the armor you had until tonight to create. But it isn't finished. Not only that, you have continued to try to steal from me, just as your parents tried to steal from me.
I grabbed the bar to the door and shoved it up. Savar leaned forward and blew on the parchment, holding it in both his hands. The smell of citrus blasted through the room. The bar slammed back into place. My fingernails scratched at the wood as I tried to hang on to it. I forced it back up, but it felt like invisible hands were shoving it down. I glanced over my shoulder. Savar stood by the demon-headed armor, his hands and wrists glowing with parchment dust, and the black ink of ancient symbols writhing on his skin.
The price of thievery is to lose your hands,
Savar said. But I'm going to rip the skin off them first and watch you scream. You're an oaf. An ugly, thick, muddy, low-born bitch who can hammer things. You can shove me out of a door, but I can rip you apart.
Cold hands grabbed my neck and yanked me free of the door. I struggled to breathe.
Blue, I gasped. You can't.
Savar swung his hands to the side, and my head struck the stone wall. My vision wavered and I staggered.
There are no sensori here tonight.
Savar made a fist and punched the air. I doubled over, clutching my stomach.
And when I am done, my men will come, wrap me in blankets, and put me in my palanquin to bear me home until the magic fades, and I'm safe again.
Blows smacked my head and face. I tried to hold my hands up to block them, but I couldn't see where the next invisible attack came from. I lurched at the forge.
Tomorrow night my father will fight without me. He'll be disappointed.
Savar's voice cracked slightly.
But I'll show him I'm still a man. I'm still strong. I'll show him what I do to a thief.
I spat blood that sizzled as it hit the hot brick around the forge fire and tried to reason.
You left me with so little to make this armor I had to take the gold from it. But the steel plates to finish it are right here. There's still time. You have stolen gold from a true family, Savar shouted, moving closer. Your life is forfeit.
There was nothing else I could do, I protested.
Your life, Savar repeated.
He slapped my face with his free hand from the other side of the forge fire. I rocked back, pulling away from him as I blinked tears out of my eyes. Savar and his father, they had always planned to kill us. We'd struggle to finish the armor, they'd accuse us of stealing, then kill us, so no one knew anything about the armor. Because who would miss us? We lived on the wrong side of the river, after all. This was our fate. I knew I couldn't fight it. But I had hoped to save my parents and myself anyway. I had hoped to run from it. But I couldn't. Maybe Borzai would judge me well and I would have a good afterlife. In the balance of my life, I had done many small injustices that would weigh against my soul. But had there not been enough done to me to compensate? Had I not worked hard for my parents, hammer in hand, day in and day out? My once small hands had been blistered at first. Now my fingers were rough and calloused. I circled the bricks around the forge, a rabbit trying to flee, and looked back at Savar with my head hung low. There was something in his eyes as he jumped up onto the bricks to look down at me, a feeling that had broached from deep within a fetid soul. It was hatred, anger, and glee. He was looking forward to torturing me. I would be another mutilated body that floated down the Sulong. The armor is almost finished, I tried to placate him one last time. Come back in a few hours and it will be done. It will be amazing, believe me. He was so close, just on the other side of the hot, rippling air of the forge. He raised his hands.
There are other blacksmiths we can pay to finish it by tomorrow. But for you there is no tomorrow, Savar screamed as he raised a fist.
The next invisible strike knocked me back from the bricks and to the floor. My fingers brushed a pair of tongs and I grabbed them without a second thought. Savar stepped around the circle of bricks, massaging his hand.
Do you know what happens to those who steal from a duke in the Blue City? Have you ever seen it? Magister Skax is always on the lookout for fresh bodies. What kind of animal will he place on your neck with his magics? I think a pig. No, an ox. Dumb and strong.
I jumped backward, tongs in one hand behind me.
You are a thief, and you will get the thief's reward.
Savar punched me in the stomach.
Please, I begged. Please, my lord. By my family's right, your head will sit on a pike by the bridge yet today, Savar spat.
I threw the tongs at him and ran. I was leaving the forge, my tools, even the gold. I was leaving my plans. I was abandoning my parents. But it was the only thing I could do. But Savar was surprisingly quick. He dodged the tongs and those invisible hands grabbed my hair and yanked.
hard enough to pull me right off my feet. I hit the floor hard, gasping, but saw him stumbling forward. He had spelled hands, but he hadn't gained strength. I stood up.
"Stop this," I said, my voice strong and clear.
Savar pulled a dagger out from his waistband. It glinted as a stray beam of firelight struck it. This was it. This was the path of the road we were on. Savar's fingers clenched the handle and took a deep breath.
"No,"
I said, and ran right at him. Savar hit me, each strike knocking me off my stride. But all they did was slow me. Savar sneered, hit me one last time, and then raised the dagger. He stabbed me with it, but I grabbed his forearm and stopped the blade halfway to my throat.
"No,"
I said again, firmly. He struggled to pull free of my grip, but my fingers were accustomed to the strike of hammer on metal. They were thick and strong. Anger grew in his face, but he couldn't free himself.
"Let go!"
I wrenched his arm to the side and hit him in the face. The crunch of knuckle against nose sounded like a walnut being cracked. Savar jerked back and yanked free as blood flowed from his nose. We stared at each other, him unsteady on his feet and quivering with rage, me with my feet planted solidly. The symbols on his arms were starting to fade, and the parchment dust turned to sweaty ash on his forearms.
"Go," I said. "Leave my forge!"
I had done the incomprehensible. I'd struck a duke's son. He would run and come back with guards, but I would have time to grab a few things and run as well. And we would both live. But Savar could not hear my words. Rage burned uncontrolled through him as he shrieked,
"You are mud! I am a lord! You will die! Stop fighting! Your life is nothing!"
Tears leaked from his eyes as he pulled out another dagger, this one crusted with diamonds around the hilt. I stepped back as he stabbed again at me. The blade nicked the tunic and sliced my shoulder. Blood ran down my upper arm as I jumped back toward a tool bench. Savar slashed at me. Not at all the delicate swipes I'd seen when knife fighters brawled in Lesser Kaim, but enough to force me to keep backing up against the bench. I grabbed one of the forge hammers by the handle. The worn, smooth wood felt comforting against my calloused palms. Savar swung his glittering dagger. Metal clinked against metal as I knocked his weapon away with my wedge-shaped hammer. I tried to warn him away, but my words died as he lunged. He tried to stab at my heart and grab at my shirt with his free hand. I grabbed his wrists and kicked him back hard. The Duke's son sprawled on the floor, his robes fluttering and pale legs flopping on the ground, and for a second I felt horrible about what I had done. I wanted to take a step forward. Savar scrabbled backward and pulled out yet another piece of parchment. Gods, the forge was going to glow if the Sensori ever approached. It was sick with it now. He balled the paper up and bit it between his teeth. Then, with a satisfied smile, he began to chew. The smell of sulfur made me cough, and a dark green glow built inside the wet wad in Savar's mouth. He stood up, brushing his robes off and putting the dagger back into the hilt inside his thick belt. A wind stirred inside the forge as the power between Savar's mouth began to suck the hair from around us toward itself. He raised his hands, and they seemed to glow. This minute, I realized, would only release one of us alive. I rushed toward him as the hair on my arms stood up and began to dance with a pale fire. I ignored the searing sensation. I ignored Savar's hands rising toward me, burning my flesh as he tried to stop the impact. I slammed my hammer down as if Savar's head were a glowing strip of steel. The hammer didn't bounce, as it did whenever it struck metal. It did not require the steadying of my forearm. It just buried itself deep into a wet explosion of blood. An explosion of heat threw me onto my back. I dropped my hands away and looked at Savar.
The hammer remained in his forehead, the handle sticking up into the air over his dripping red face. He screamed, spitting more blood and pieces of parchment, and staggered toward the door before he fell to his hands and knees. His eyes looked beyond it, though, to another realm, to something I couldn't see as he crawled forward, dripping blood on the forge floor. I couldn't let him leave, not keening like that. Someone would hear it the moment the thick doors opened. I dragged him back from the entrance. He pawed at me with one hand, smearing me with blood. His words sounded real, but made no sense to me despite their earnestness. "You can't go," I said. "It's too late. You can't go now." Savar looked over my shoulder at the thick beams of the roof and screamed. Screamed like one of the cats I had seen the river boys throw in the Sulong for amusement, then pelted stones at it until they stopped struggling and slipped under the oily surface. I cupped my hand firmly over his mouth. "Be quiet." A loud gurgling sound bubbled up through my fingers. I looked away. I had to find a cloth to stuff down his mouth, and then rope to bind him with. Then I could run. Then I could run. All this because of gold filigree. All this over the suit of armor. Savar shook his head and screamed again with those strange nonsense sounds. I was already dead. I couldn't walk away alive from this. But if I moved quickly, I could save Milaka from him. I might yet be able to free my mother and father. Looking slightly off to the side, I yanked the hammer free of Savar's face and raised it again. I smashed it into his face and he screamed even louder. So I hit him again, and then again, and again, until he stopped screaming and blood dripped softly from around the edges of the dying wad of light he clenched between his teeth. I watched dust motes sparkle in the morning air above the coals of the forge as I sat on the floor and trembled. What had I done? What had I done? I panted like a dog, suddenly unable to draw a full breath. I scrambled on my hands and knees around the forge to put the warm bricks between me and the body of Savar. For long minutes I waited for the door to splinter, for city guards to spill in and drag me out into the dusty street. For anything. But there was only the still, slowly warming air of the forge. My face still felt numb from his slaps. My shins ached from his kicks. But he was dead on the floor now, on the other side of the forge from me. I peeked around the bricks. A red pool of blood grew around his ruined head, the hammer still buried so deep into his face. I kissed my thumb and little finger and touched them to my stomach. "Asim, you gave me a sign. So why is this happening to me? Have I made the wrong choice?" Asim did not respond. After my breathing slowed, I struggled back up to my feet and walked to the door. I cracked it open to look outside. Savar's palanquin sat untended at the corner of the street, beaded wet with late morning mist that the sun had long since burned away. The city's air was now filled with squawking chickens, hawkers, songs, bells, and all the cacophony of a city well into the swing of its day. No one was coming for me. Savar had sent them all away. I shut the door, barred it, and put my back to it. But what would happen when the guard came to look for his lord? How long would it take for them to think of me as the killer and to come hunting for me? A day? Half a day? The pool of blood around Savar flickered as fire licked higher into the air in the forge. A fly landed in the blood and started licking at it. Life can be found even in death, I realized. I needed to stop thinking about things that may or may not happen, and make choices. The fly, heavy with blood, took to the air as I shifted. "Soot," I said. My father hated it. We kept the floors scrubbed, but most forges were caked with soot.
"It covers everything, sticks everywhere, unless you keep a clean shop," my father had said.
His words echoed inside me as I looked around. If I hid Savar behind the woodpiles, maybe the guards would not spot him. And if I spread soot around to soak up the blood, maybe it would just look like a dirty blacksmith's shop. I glanced at the forge. It was not big enough to accept a whole body. I would have to chop it up piece by piece to feed it to the fire. The smoke would discolor, and the smell would betray me to any passerby. It would take too long to do it correctly, and I wasn't even sure if I had enough wood to finish the suit, as well as burn a body. So I needed to hide the body quickly, finish my work, and then don the armor to execute my plan. I grabbed a fire pit shovel and approached the coals for ashes and debris to spread around the floor. I stopped when I reached Savar's body and looked down at his hands. They lay unmoving on either side of his body. A good soul would put that jeweled dagger of his in his palm. That way Savar could offer one of Borzai's godlings a fine price to whisper sweet praises to the judging god's ear before he weighed Savar's soul. Well, shit on that, I thought, and raised the shovel. Savar and his father had destroyed our lives, beaten us, tried to kill us, may yet kill us. Why let his soul be judged with coin on the other side of the scales for Borzai? I slammed the point of the shovel down into his left wrist, twisting until the blade of the shovel separated the hand from his forearm. I repeated the act of butchery on the other arm. Now Savar would be unable to press valuables into any godling's hands on the other side. When they buried the little lordly rat, he would be unable to help his soul weigh anything other than true. He would be no different from any of the low-born criminals hanging without their hands along the avenue of justice. I threw open the windows to the noon sun as if I had nothing to hide, as if there weren't the body of an actual lord limp behind the woodpile. And then I threw myself into the last day of work before me. The last of the plates needed to be shaped and connected. The armor's springs needed to be hooked together, and the pump latches on the forearms installed. After that, the cart in the shed would need to be packed up. I moved as if I were possessed. I did not think about the future as I saw the guard return to the palanquin. I hammered metal.
Girl!
I turned, throwing sweat from my forehead to the ground with my hand.
What? What are you interrupting me for?
The guardsman looked puzzled at my anger.
Where is the Duke's son?
I don't know. I turned back to my work.
He was in here this morning when I left.
He was. I turned to show him the bruises on my face. Then I pulled my sleeves up to show him the cuts and marks on my arms.
He did what he came to do, and now I must get to my work, or when tomorrow dawns, worse will happen.
The man swallowed.
Where did he go?
I assume he left to go beat someone else, I hissed.
Sir, I must finish my work. Look around the forge. He is not here.
The sweat that dripped from my brow was no longer just from the heat. I returned to my work as the guardsman searched, even poking around the edges of the woodpile. But he saw nothing. Savar was at the very bottom of all the cut wood. As he left, I pointed my hammer at the man in the ragged robes waiting near the palanquin.
Ask him, he'll know.
The guard ran off to consult with Savar's pet spy, while I continued my work. Throughout the midday they continued to come and go, their search expanding, until two men dressed in house color strode angrily down the street to hassle the bodyguard. They hauled him away as he protested, off to go explain where the missing boy was.
The Duke will deal roughly with him, the informant, so very obsessed with truth, said casually to me from the edge of the forge, seeing my interest.
It's never smart to take up with the Velvet Ones, I said. The boy has seemingly disappeared into thin air.
I wouldn't be killing myself to finish this armor if that were true, I replied.
Now come in and search like the guard, or leave me to my work.
The ragged robes shifted in the wind as he considered my offer.
No, I have other haunts to investigate. But if you hide the truth from me, no, it will come out.
By morning I'm sure the mystery will be solved, I said, with absolute certainty. Then I turned my back to him and picked up the hammer. When the light paled, calmly, as if it were any other night, I closed the windows, doors, and banked the fires. I cleaned up my tools, setting them all in a neat row on the main bench. Water to douse the last embers was drawn from the trough, water to wash my face in the second bucket. It felt like any other night in the forge. Until I faced the armor and stared into its glassy blank eye slits, covered in glass, the dark demonic eyes of something that had pulled us all into its fold. You've taken so much from us, I told the unmoving statue that silently watched everything in the forge. I reached forward and pulled the helmet with its carved serpents off its shoulders. Now, please, give me something back. I'd need to pull the armor on now, because who knew what time I would have once out on the open fields. I had to leave the forge in full armor, and hope the night hid me enough from curious eyes and guards who would challenge me. I pulled each segment on one at a time. It was a difficult thing to seal it properly, but I'd worked hard on that as well. There were buckles and catches all around the outer pieces that pulled each piece into place, but it was slow, sweaty work with a lot of fumbling. When I finished, I stood still for a moment. I'd never put all the pieces on, just tried different parts. It felt strange to stand here, dressed like a fully blooded lord in armor. It shifted slightly as I walked, the leather and plated armor skirts over my steel-cased legs swinging with me as I swayed from side to side, getting used to the restricted movement. I could walk around well enough, even hop. The weight wasn't that much worse than carrying a shouldered piece of plank and 7 or so full buckets of water for the trough. My back held up easily. With care, I took the helmet up with my gloved hands and pulled it on. I breathed with relief as it settled over my neck. Now, for the first time, I could actually begin my plan. The heavy weight I'd been carrying melted from my shoulders. There was nothing left to do but go out to the burned fields and ash, where my parents were buried alive. The night had cooled, thankfully. The moon hid somewhere out of sight, leaving me to navigate down the dirt roads of lesser kind by the occasional flicker of the night torches, but my feet knew the roads, even without light. I still had to take the helmet off right where the road turned to cobblestones, as my hot breath fogged the glass slits near my eyes, and I did not want to stumble over the stones. Not a soul challenged me. By the banks of the Sulong, only the occasional drunken worker passed by, on their way to a late collapse into their home, if they had one. Some stared at me, but the heraldic symbols and obvious wealth of the armor kept all at bay. Some shook their heads and fled, sure they were seeing a demon walking the night streets. This was what it felt like to be one of the people from higher up the hill, I thought. People avoiding my eyes, looking to the ground, giving me a wide berth. Only the cart I pulled behind me made one tavern keeper throwing a bucket of slop onto the street frown and stare after me, trying to work out what I was about. But then he shook himself and continued on. I reached the fields soon enough, bumping my cart along in the dark. I stopped again, this time to prime a shop lantern and hang it from a pole I fixed to the handles of the cart, so it could swing above me and light the path. With the day's bramble burning done, there was nothing but me and the ash my feet stirred up. It swirled like grey snow flurries in the orange light of the swinging lantern. It took several passes of the field to find the spear Malabaz had thrust into the ground. I put my helmet on and tightened the buckles holding it to my neck. The spear quivered slightly in the wind as I approached, and touched my helm, my heart, and offered a prayer. Then I took out a shovel from the cart and dug. The bramble magister Skax had summoned appeared after I cleared away the dirt,
like the ribs of a skeleton appearing from under a shallow grave. I cleared the brown clumps away, then stepped down onto it with a shudder. My copper and steel shod feet crunched against the fuzzy